the political side of it, and then there's the real story.
There's a lot to unpack right there. It wasn't quite the interview I thought that was going to be.
There's a reason for it.
This will be officially my favorite podcast I've ever done.
Well, Todd, I had no intention of getting into publishing. Life wanted me to go into publishing. My first two careers were teaching English at Vancouver Community College for 10 years, five of which I was the department chairman. And life, again, because of my interest in business and my ability to teach, I was drawn into business teaching. And that led me into management consulting. And I had my own firm for 10 years. Mm. And it was at the end of that 10th year that I met Eckhart Tolle. And things just changed. I had no intention of leaving my practice. A publisher, I never thought of being a publisher. So it's really quite a, as I told your assistant, it's almost like destiny. Mm. There was this thin line of destiny that was running through my life. So the background in English and teaching, as well as business, really prepared me to be a publisher.
I am interested in when you started your publisher, what age you were. And the reason I ask is because, I'll give you some background, and that is, I saw an article in the Wall Street Journal over the weekend about a 55-year-old starting a business that's now transformed the world, and that's Taiwan Semiconductor, and how they talk about founders being young, you know, like the Mark Zuckerbergs of the world that have a material difference. But you decided to start your own publishing at what age, or what, you know, part of life for you, if you don't
probably
want to
talk about it? Early 40s.
You were early 40s. Wow. So obviously it's a big deal to do that. Scary. I mean, most people, by the time they're in their early 40s, or in my case, you know, obviously don't want to take that risk. But I would love to hear about how you met Eckhart.
Well, it wasn't frightening at all. I had no inhibitions about transferring into publishing. So I was in my management consulting practice, and one day after work, we met in the boardroom. We were just kind of, you know, shooting the breeze kind of thing. And I mentioned to one of my colleagues, you know, I really want to deepen my spirituality. And John Kuchenthal, that's his name, said, oh, I just met a fellow who came from England, and he's said to be a spiritual teacher. Should I ask him if he would come lead what we call Sangha, which is spiritual group, in your office? And I said, oh, John, that'd be wonderful. Next week, Wednesday, at the appointed time, after we had gathered in our group, there was this little knock on the door, very faint. And I got up and I opened the door. And this small, gentle-speaking man said, hello, I'm Eckhart Tolle. And then it began. And he held Sangha in our office every week. And Todd, we could measure the shift in our stillness, in our awareness, in our joy. That's how powerful Eckhart's teaching was, and to be that close in his presence as well. And I could see it on my colleagues' faces. They looked it. They had a softer demeanor. So over time, I heard Eckhart was wanting to write a book. Fabulous. If I should be given any credit, Todd, it's for recognizing Eckhart as a profound and timely teacher, especially for the West, for the Western world. He was able to put pure distilled spiritual truth in a clear contemporary bottle. And that's what's happening with people who read Eckhart. They don't have to have a PhD. My plumber came in the other day and saw it on the shelf. Eckhart is accessible in his teachings to such a broad audience because he speaks in a language that simplifies profound truth, and people feel it and they get it. So I recognized him and his teaching for our times. And I don't know how long it was after that. I heard he was writing a book that he asked me to be his publisher. I had never considered that. But I felt so strongly, Todd, about the power of his teaching. And if we could get it out into the world, that would be fantastic. So I said yes. What did I know about publishing? Nothing. I bought two self-publishing books. But I had been in management consulting long enough. You're hired by a client, let's say a cement company. What do you know about cement? You learn about cement. And so it was, I'll learn about publishing. And so, as I said to Christy earlier, I call it the miracle of the mustard seed. Because this little publishing house that wasn't even a publishing house to begin with, but it was formed to be a vehicle through which to get Eckhart's teaching out into the world. This little publishing house, that seed, if you have faith as a mustard seed, look at what can happen. So I remember my sister used to say, Constance, do you believe it? Do you believe, you know, because we watched what was happening, and she said, did you ever think? And to be honest, I never thought about it. There was no plans, no expectation, Todd. It was, get this teaching out into the world. So it broke all kind of publishing norms. First-time author, first-time publisher, first-time graphic artist. It spread by word of mouth. I refused to advertise. Not that I had that much money to do it in the first place. But I refused to advertise because I thought that the teaching was so pure. I didn't in any way want to commercialize it. So, I mean, Eckhart and I met every week, Wednesdays, in my husband's downtown law office. He provided a boardroom for us, and we met. And sometimes I get a call, and Eckhart would say, oh, Constance, it just didn't flow this week. Let's meet next week. But whatever came out was just absolutely pure.
How long did it take from the time you decided to publish a book till it was published?
That's a good question. Because when I met Eckhart, the book hadn't been written. I met him in 1996, and The Power of Now first came out in 1998. If you ask me today, after editing or including the editing process, which you don't know how long it's going to take, about a year.
What does it mean that problems are illusions?
Well, we're talking about levels here.
Sure.
On one level, problems are very real. On another level, they can be seen to be illusory. So in this third dimension we're all in, time and space are constructs. And so they're very real. Now, maybe in other dimensions they aren't. I haven't quite experienced those yet. But time and space are very real. And what happened in our evolution, Todd, there came a time when self-reflected consciousness came into being, suddenly there was a sense of I, my personal I, and that I is not this I. And so fear came in. You had to defend yourself against others, protect yourself against others. And this whole thing of fear, being fear-driven because of the other, has created many problems, many, many problems in this dimension. They're very real. We can't say, you know, he got fired from his job, and that's not real. In this dimension, it's very real. But Eckhart talks about the horizontal dimension and the vertical dimension. So on the horizontal dimension, the chronological dimension, that's me and my story, right? And whatever happens along that horizontal line, that's who I am. I'm a mother. I'm a sister. I'm a management consultant. I'm a TV host. You're none of those things. Those are roles you play that you've taken on because you believe you are separate. You can be a mother, but you're not labeled as a mother. You're a presence showing up to care for your child out of love. But to put a label on anything is to diminutize it, to deaden it, to a flower. You put a label on it, and suddenly it's a daffodil. It's not just a flower. It's a daffodil. It's yellow. It has this shape, and it lasts this long. If you just let it be, then you're going to be able to appreciate it more and take in the fullness of the daffodil at that time.
Skyla, do you know that? Have you heard that term, power of illusion? Or the problems are illusions.
I have, yeah.
So, what do you think of Eckhart? I mean, why you are so fascinated with this book? The power of now. I'm curious.
Yes. So, I had heard of it when I was in college, and I bought it along with a group of other books that I didn't read. I just bought a bunch of books, and I didn't read any of them, and I ended up moving, and they all ended up in a box. And then within 1 week, The Power of Now, the book, came up in 3 different conversations. And then in that same week, I was cleaning my garage and I found the book. And I was like, okay, so it's definitely time for me to read the book now. And I read it. It took me probably 2 months to read it because there was so much information in the book that you would read 10, 15 pages and you had to go sit with it and like actually internalize what was being read. And when I got done with reading the book, I felt like I had a whole new outlook on life because, yes, you're told that, you know, you'll never exist in another moment, but the way he explains it, it makes it so relatable. And it's not like all these big words that make it hard to understand. He's able to explain it to everyone. Like Constance was saying, he's accessible to everyone. And that was, I think, what really attracted me to it. And I just felt so connected to myself and connected to everything else after reading the book. And I mean, I so much that I got a tattoo that says now on my wrist. I don't know if you can see that, but as a reminder to always be in the moment, because you're living every day and you get caught up in the past and the future and you get caught up in all these things, but you'll never exist in another moment that's not right now. And to me, that was just completely life-changing.
Mm. What do you I'm just curious as to whether the way you and I live our life, because, you know, obviously you're my assistant and you're my niece and you travel with me all over the world. I'm curious as to if there's anything that you and I do that's in that book.
I do think that, I mean, there's been moments recently where we've been in super amazing situations where you're like, wow, we need to take a second and we need to appreciate this.
Sure.
And I think that's, you know, part of the book is people don't appreciate the awesome moment of right now, and they're just like, oh, well, what's next? What am I going to do next? Mm. But I do think that you do take time, we take time in the amazing life that we get to live to appreciate it.
For sure. So we are financially driven. I run a public company, a private equity firm. Obviously, I'm judged on whether I make any money or lose any money. So I'm curious as to when you decided to start a publishing company. Was there an economic, I mean, there's this clearly a spiritual, personal satisfaction. You published this book, you know Eckhart. You brought something to help them bring something to life. There's a huge satisfaction to that. And the book seems to have been very successful. I'm curious on your end, was publishing a book successful for you too, or was that more of a charity?
That's such a good question, because it started out with no intention of making money. It started out with my being in a position, fortunately, as life would have it, to have the money to put into bringing this book to professional status and putting it out into the world. But there were many hurdles after that, before it kind of found its slipstream. And after that, there was no stopping it. So I don't know how many millions of copies it sold around the world. 10, 15, 20. It's in 55 languages.
10 or 15 million books have been sold?
Yes. Oprah, when she put on A New Earth, which I published with Eckhart, I am so glad I licensed Penguin USA to do that book. Eckhart and I intuitively knew something about this book, because it wasn't about personal growth. It was about the collective book and that it was really going to go. So Oprah picked it up. She didn't know about it either until one of her producers brought her attention to it. And she was going to interview Eckhart on The Power of Now. And her producer, she had a number, one of them, said, did you know he wrote another book? It's A New Earth. And Oprah started reading it. And the interview was on both books. And then she did her 10-week webinar. I could not have pressed 6 million books in 6 weeks. It just, and her, so thank God for Oprah. I've said that a couple of times, you know, regarding her authors. So that was A New Earth. The Power of Now was already on its way. It caught traction and then just went. But A New Earth, and sometimes I talk to people, and they read one of the books of Power of Now or A New Earth, but not the other. And I can't understand. And it was almost as if one of those books was sufficient. Like The Power of Now or A New Earth. If somebody came across A New Earth and read it, oftentimes they didn't even look for The Power of Now, and vice versa. So it's almost like those books kind of reach their audience, their reading audience, and that was sufficient for them. Just the one book, not two.
You sell that many books. Obviously, the businessman in me wants to know, like...
I mean, oh, good question. Thank you for asking. Okay, I'm going to share with you the experience of my business success.
Well, no, I've got to say to you, I don't understand how you publish, even print that many books. I presume that's because you had Penguin helping you?
Yes, they have an in-house, exactly. So they have their in-house press, and once something's on the print run, it goes 24/7 and all of that stuff. But my success as a business person is because of who I was as a person, and that I came from the dimension, the vertical dimension of my soul, when I wanted to put that book out into the world with that art. And so this is going to be interesting for your audience, because my business model is coming from noble intention. There's egoic intention, where you do something because it's for you. You want to make money, you want to get more prestige, you want to have a higher profile, you want to secure, you know, your family for the next generation. But that's all basically for me, which is the ego. Nothing wrong with that. It's just that that kind of energy is limiting. It's limiting to the degree of what the ego can accomplish. And that's so, but when you come from noble intention, it's heart-based. It's heart-based. And that energy that you put in is selfless. It's service, basically. You want to be of service. And noble intention is, to me, the spiritual power engine under any success. You can be successful in the world, but are you really successful? When do you feel satisfied? When do you feel joy? And Eckhart and I honestly, Todd, we didn't know if six people, 60, six, or 60 million would read The Power of Now. We didn't know. All we knew is that we had come together, and that's powerful, joining in noble intention, in oneness, and putting it out. And then it was, let's see where life wants to take this. But I don't want to minimize the marching orders that I had to go through and Eckhart had to go through in order to see that book and get it to a point where it truly spread solely by word of mouth. And that's the best advertising you can get, as you know.
Well, if you sold 15 or 20 million books, that's a lot of books, man. Oh, that is
Did I profit financially? Absolutely. Am I still profiting financially? Absolutely. But to me,
How's Eckhart doing? How's Eckhart doing?
Really, really well.
has he produced any other books after this? I know The Power of Now, but I don't know the story behind it. So this is
a newer. What happened, Todd, was over time, you know, in the early days, I used to travel with Eckhart and attend his teachings and all of that. And I suddenly saw that there was a shift to kind of embracing where the collective was. And he's very much there today as well. The Power of Now was geared more to the individual coming into their awareness of what I'll call their true self, their spiritual self. And so I call it the fruits of our effort, the outcomes of our noble intention. Although, again, don't minimize, we did the work. We did the work, and we did the follow-up work. And Eckhart is continuing to do the work. He's still teaching at almost 77. He's in California, next Vancouver, Edmonton, then Greece. He continues to teach, and I am blown away. I don't have that energy at all. Mm. Not a tenth of it. But he's driven by his purpose. And he will continue to do whatever he has to do to take his teaching out into the world as long as the body supports him in that.
You've published other books, some of your own and some for other people. Has anything even been close to what's happened with Eckhart?
No. Oh, Todd, you're so good. You're seeding all my stuff I want to give you. No. Well, there was A New Earth, and then we also put out Stillness Speaks. But that was so deep that there were very few people kind of ready for it. Mm. And so it's done well, but not like The Power of Now and A New Earth. But we now have received, well, we didn't publish a book for a long time. Todd, you know, we would get 20, 30 submissions a month and nothing grabbed us at all. It was the same old material, rehashed, watered down, not comparable to any of the books we've put out before, including, of course, Eckhart's. But we recently signed two amazing books. I call them lead books. And I think one, maybe both, are in the caliber of taking us to the next state of consciousness, as Eckhart has done to this point.
You've seen Dale Carnegie, you know, I don't know if you've ever read any of his literature, but Dale Carnegie published How to Win Friends and Influence People, and it's very popular. It's been around for a long time. And he created a foundation around it. Do you envision that Eckhart's teachings will go on in some sort of foundational method, or what will happen?
Eckhart has established a foundation. Mm-hmm. And so he makes books available to people who can't afford them, and to prisoners. I heard recently that he and Oprah were going to go and visit a couple of prisons down in California. So he's got his foundation already, and he set that up himself. I wasn't involved.
Well, there's a lot of power behind the idea that Oprah Winfrey sort of endorsed his process. I mean, obviously, it's lightning in a bottle, right? I mean, you get Oprah behind it, and lightning hits, and then all hell breaks loose.
Welcome, everybody, to week number 4 of our New Earth web class. Thank you again for joining us as we come together to study and to discuss our 61st book club selection, Eckhart Tolle's A New Earth. I am just so happy that so many of you around the world are making time. You're giving time to yourself every week to be awakened, and we're all doing this together. It is really my deepest hope that our collective consciousness will begin to create a powerful transformation, not only in our individual lives, but in the future of our planet. So welcome to you all, and welcome, sir.
Thank you.
Yes.
Scott, I'm wondering what you got out of it. Like, you've spoke about this before. You tattooed it on your body.
Yeah.
I mean, you're looking at the person who helped make it, so.
I know. Well, I got out of it a sense of, I think, acceptance, and that there's so many more people that, so there was a lot of things in the book that I had heard before, but he was able to explain it where it resonated so much, like in my deep soul, it just resonated so much where I was able to not feel like alone in certain beliefs that I had. And I feel like it helped me really feel, I guess, proud of who I am and the beliefs that I have. And it made me feel not alone in the beliefs that I have, which I think that was probably the most important thing the book did for me.
Did you read the book before or after you went to Hawaii?
Hawaii? After.
So after.
I bought the book when I was a sophomore in college, and then I read the book 2 years ago. So I had the book for a good, like, 3.5 years.
So 2 years ago, were you living with me?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I found it when I moved to Vegas, because it was in all the boxes that I moved from Santa Barbara.
Oh, got it.
And it found me, because I really, like, hadn't thought about it in such a long time. And in 3 different conversations with 3 completely different people, the book came up, and I was like, oh, I hadn't thought about it in a while. And then I found it that same week.
Well,
and
no, because I remember, like, okay, changes in your personality. I'm trying to think about the timing of them.
Yeah.
Right? Because I remember you were very... You grew up really
fast.
Calmed
me down a little bit. Yeah, it definitely calmed me down a little bit.
I bet it did.
Yeah.
Let me suggest 2 things. You found the book after so long a time, but the book found you at the right time.
Yes. I don't know if I would have been able to really understand the book if I had read it when I bought it.
Right. Huh. And another thing you brought up, which I'd love to bring forward, is how it impacted you, Skylar. And it's like, oh, I'm not alone. This is real. Mm-hmm. This is human stuff. Now I can understand it. And my feeling, my knowing, is that because Eckhart came from presence, universal presence, when he wrote this book, it ignites that universal presence in you. And when you read the book, as you said, you have to pause and stop, because
it's never taken me so long to read a book.
It's a physical thing. It's a full body experience. Mm-hmm. And when you come from presence, Eckhart talks about presence all the time. You know that, Skylar. And what is presence? People say, what is Eckhart says, you know, when you come from presence. And for me, you really can't be in the now unless you come from presence. Otherwise, The ego will take you into fear about learning from the past, about protecting yourself in the future. But to be in presence requires you be, and you know this from Eckhart too, Skyla, in the inner body, in the consciousness within the body that you can, when you're still, feel. And you can actually purposely ignite the inner body.
So, I better read this book.
We'll have another interview.
Yeah, I haven't read it. Listen, I spend a lot of time on self-help books. Trust me, I'm a big believer in this, and I've heard of it, but I don't recall that I've read it. But I mean, I may have. It just doesn't. It's not resonating with me that I've read it.
So this is when life has found you. This book has now found you.
We got a bunch of different topics. I was going to ask you to tell me about watching The Thinker.
Okay, so that's being the witness. It's basically, I don't want to lose your audience, but we are pure awareness. We are not this body. This planet is not all there is. We are pure awareness. And when we stop and we look at something from, if I'm looking at the tree outside, from a witnessing position, you know that there is form and there's the witness of the form. The tree falls in the forest. No one's there. Is there a sound? No, because there's no witness. So when you purposely step back and witness someone and are really present in a conversation, you know that there's something else in action. There's something else in action. And some people have, those who have had near-death experiences, all have broken from the body and been the witness. I had only one experience of that in my life, and it's never happened again. It's not something you can will into experience. It happens when it happens, if it happens. But once it does, you know that there is the witness here, this consciousness here, and that consciousness is seeing that truth. And so you know you're not form. It's that tree. If you're witnessing that tree and you're witnessing, you know, this body here too, then who are you? You're the witness. You are pure consciousness.
Where does the power now fit into manifestation and all the things that happen around where we are presently are? Because I find myself the other day, I had a really weird, like, just for a second thought, and I told myself not to think it, because a lot of times what I think comes true. Like, it just seems to, at least for me, it seemed to be able to, strangely, things have, sound like a weirdo, but I'm just saying, like, I'm 54 now, and I can't keep denying the fact that I seem to be able to, like, just kind of come up with the idea, and then it manifests itself into the process, and I happen to meet people that can help me along the way. Like, it's almost like I come up with an idea, I wonder how I'm going to do it, I ponder it long enough, and then someone delivers me a bunch of people in my life that say, here's how you do it. I'm like, well, I was thinking about that. How does that work in the power of now, or being a witness, or anything around the concept of his teachings?
Well, manifestation is a hot topic right now. And I think it's because humanity, especially in the West, is evolving to a point where their consciousness is very powerful. The beginning of any manifestation is intention. Okay. And then, you know, people think, oh, if I visualize enough, you know, I will get what I want. But visualization, even prayer, are just extensions of what your intention is. So where are you coming from? So You heard a lot about conscious investing and that kind of thing. I go back to the power of creative, noble intention. But you can create, it happens to me too, I want some particular cheese and I haven't found it, and all of a sudden I find it. Right? So that's really kind of, I think that's where we're going, Todd. I think we in consciousness are moving to manifestation very quickly.
So you think it's intention? Starts with intention.
I think all manifestation begins with intention. And then you can add desire, and then you can add belief, and then you can add visualization. But the starting point is you have to intend. And where does your intention come from? Well, and that's a wonderful thing to witness.
I want to ask you, where do you live? What state do you live in?
I live in Canada.
Canada.
Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada.
It's beautiful up there. So I'm going to ask you a question that is not intended to be political. It's literally, okay. The question is about our times, right? The now, okay? And you know, if you've ever studied history, and I have studied history, there was a time where the world was going to end because of the Cuban Missile Crisis, or there was going to be global warming, or we're going to run out of oil in the 70s. There's always sort of this crisis happening in the universe. I'm sure there was a time where people had towns in the West and they didn't like that there was a lot of horses, you know, with manure. I'm sure there was always a reason to have a problem, right? There's always a current political issue. And I used to say, politicians will always say this is the most important election. This is the most important thing ever. And if you live in the now, it sounds like maybe that's the case, right? If you followed the teachings of Eckhart, maybe that is the case. It's the most important thing right now. But I saw a video the other day, and this is where I'm saying it's not political. I'm really asking your opinion. I saw a video of an argument between a doctor and two other people saying that if a man decides he wants to be a woman, then there should be tampons put in the male restroom to make sure that when he's menstruating, he can get access to tampons. I was like, cannot believe I was watching this. And I mean that from a standpoint of like, where the hell are we? Like, how is real not real anymore? I don't even know how you have this argument, right? And it seems to be like an actual argument where cities are approving shit. And I'm curious as to how you relate to your, because it sounds like to me, if you and I were sitting in a room, you have an awareness, right? It reminds me of Skyla a little bit, actually. And that is just sort of like an overall, like, it's going to be fine, and pay attention to the bigger issues in the world, not the ones that are all dramatic. And I don't know how to word it like you do, but like, there's a sense of calm, I would think, almost like you named your publishing, it looked like Namaste, right? Which is something that the person who used to put me to sleep when I couldn't sleep, she was a yoga instructor, would do the whole, I mean, very, very intent on deliberate words that were calming, very spiritual. And how does the spiritual world deal with what looks like insanity in the current world?
A lot of it is insanity. Honestly, excuse my language, it's a shit show out there. And how do you deal with it? Probably Skyla would agree that in order, we're in a mess. And in order for us to shift into a better way of living, a way of being kind to each other, a way of cooperation, a way of non-competition, a way of support. How do we shift to that, given the polarities out there? I get sick. I can't watch the news anymore. I give myself 1 hour, and it's usually catching up on my device. Literally, I get nauseous. And Eckhart and I have had this conversation, too. Until it gets really bad, until it gets chaotic. And what chaos is all of this stuff happening at the same time. It's not put out that fire, and then let's do that one, and then next that fire. It's everything happening at the same time, and we're out of control. But basically, what is happening during chaos, when everything is up in the air and out of control and unpredictable and terrifying, is that is required to bring in a higher order. So embedded in the nature of chaos is a higher order. And we have to have faith in that. We have to. And yeah. So when you see all these awful things happening, you say, okay, this is required. This is required until we get to the point where we're out of control and we surrender to the fact that we need each other. And energetically, at some level, this chaotic energy takes a harmonious form and we emerge better human beings, collectively, the whole world. So it's really hard to see that in all this chaos that it's leading to a higher order. And I have to hold to that faith. I have to hold to that faith. I don't know what it's going to look like. I don't know what else we have to experience. I feel things are going to get worse before they get better. But I have to hang on to that. And I guess that's faith. And that's part of manifestation, too, is we have to have faith that this new order is coming into being, will manifest. Mm-hmm. It's hard. But that's our work right now. That's our work.
I like the idea of intention. I like the idea of the way you said it, because I spent a little time in the military and military dress, effectively like different organizations of the military. And there was always like, you know, if you had to do something serious, it was like, state your intention, right? You know, what are you doing? I'm fascinated with this. So I'm going to have to figure out if I have it. For some reason, I feel like this is on my shelf somewhere. I think I bought this book. Wow. And so I'm going to go home tonight. I'm going to look, because I have a bookshelf and an extensive collection of books. And for some reason, I bet I have it. And if I don't have it, is it in audio form?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm kind of an audio snob. I like that kind of... I would love it if we could talk again. I know our hour is up, and I'd love to have you come back on again and talk about what you're doing. I do want to leave on a few notes, though, and that is, you have a couple books you published yourself that are your books, Inner Peace. Do you have any suggestion for the audience on what your favorite book is you'd want them to read of yours?
No, what I would suggest, Todd, though, is that if they, like, I could talk, but I'm never going to be able to convey in 5 minutes or so what the books are about. So if they just go to ConstanceKellow.com, you'll see my books, what they're about, all of that stuff. And if they want to go to our website, of course, it's www.namastepublishing.com, you'll see the other books that we've published.
We're going to definitely put them up on the website. We'll put them up in the podcast. We like to give out books to people who watch through to the end. I will have Christy, right now I'm going to say we're going to give away 100 books to the people who watch to the end of the first ones. We'll have them text Namaste to 31798, 31798, text Namaste. And the first people who text Namaste will have their choice of 100 books that we're going to give out for Constance, because we love her being a guest. And Skyla has now tattooed on her wrists, so you know we're serious. Yeah, let's see it. Is it there? Can you zoom in? I don't know if you can or not, but it's right there. Constance, we appreciate your time. And I am going to read the book, And then I'm going to make sure, if you're willing to do it, that Christy invites you to come to our we have a conference called Risk On. We do it every year in Las Vegas. And I'd love for you to come speak and meet the audience and sign your book and be our guest here in Las Vegas to speak on one of our panels about publishing. I think I can think of a bunch of people who will be fascinated to meet you, especially since you did the thing yourself. You just decided to publish, become a publisher. I think that from a business standpoint, there's nothing more powerful than a woman deciding she can do whatever. I mean, honestly, I have two daughters. I'm enthralled by the fact that at 40 years old, you decided to, hey, I'm going to create my own publisher and never be in the publishing business. And that story is enough in itself to tell people about. Then you went on to publish something that sold 20 million books. So we've got to have you there. I will read The Power of Now. I promise you that.
Okay. Oh, okay. Promise. Now, you will...
It is my intention.
But I want good. And set an intention every day. Get up and just set.
I do every day. You have no idea how much that.
You're on the track. And I have to say, I love Skylar.
Thank you. I love Skylar.
Well, you remind me of her.
You guys, be able to meet you.
You guys speak a little bit alike, so I can see where that comes from. And it sounds like Christy, my producer, read the book in 2011. She said it changed her life. So obviously. She's going to look forward to getting you down here. So hopefully we can drag
you. Pleasure to be in a position to bring out the power of the word. And our next books are going to bring out the power of the word and the power of experience. That's the leap. They won't be quite a while.
We're grateful for your time, and we'll see you again.
Namaste.
Thank you. Thank you, dear. Thank you so much.
There's a reason for it.
So I did get that right.
Yeah, you got it right.